a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan, and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVant.ie. Plenty coming up on the show. We'll be kicking off in a few minutes, joining our own Ken Doherty, chatting about the football last night and all the various things from the papers. In racing, we'll be hearing from racing pundit and Racing Post contributor Andrew Blair-White about the very latest news in horse racing, and also previewing this weekend's racing, and we'll get his lucky 15. We're delighted as well to have Declan Drake in studio, our regular GA correspondent. He will be reviewing the ladies' Dublin win over Mayo in the league semi-final, and we'll hear from the player of the match, Lindsay Davey. In football, Alan Cawley will be with us, of Cawley's Call, of course, to review that England-Scotland game and all the other matches as well so far in the Euros. It's been quite a brilliant tournament so far, and we'll look back at the League of Ireland fixtures during the week as well. In tennis, we'll be chatting to three-time tennis Olympian Owen Casey as he looks back on the French Open, and we look ahead to Wimbledon, which starts, of course, in just over a week on the 28th of June. We're delighted as well to have guest Anne Leonard from Bikram Yoga Studio in Dublin to tell us about Bikram Yoga and the style that it is, that is done in 40 degrees of heat, which certainly is quite a work up a sweat. It's becoming increasingly popular over the last number of years amongst rugby players, MMA fighters, and they look for new ways to increase their fitness. And our other guest will be chatting to Ollie O'Brien from the Bowling League of Ireland. Next weekend, bowls clubs all over the country will be hosting open days, and Ollie will be explaining a little bit about the history of the sport and why we should all be heading along to our local club to sign up. Okay, it is Men's Health Awareness Week this week as well, and we're going to talk to a sports psychologist later on the show, Keith Begley, about minding our mental health and the challenges facing athletes today. As always, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 1155 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, and Twitter at Sport1068. We're on Instagram as well, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Well, it's time to talk to the one and only Ken Doherty. Morning, Ken. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are you?
Doing great. Really good form. I have to say, I'm absolutely buzzing at the moment around these Euros. I'm not missing a game. I'm loving it. Whether it's highlights or sitting down every evening at 8 o'clock, taking over the telly, I've managed to take over the TV. It's great. I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? And what a match that was last night. It was fantastic for the Scots, how well they played. I'm in London at the moment, and yesterday morning, driving through London, there was crowds of Scots. A lot of them came down with no tickets or anything like that. And it was a bunch of lads, and they're walking through London. It was lashing out of the heavens.
Yeah.
And there's about six or seven of them. They've all got a bottle of champagne in their hands. It's like 11 o'clock in the morning. And they're walking through London up by Hyde Park. Absolutely drowned in rats, but didn't care. Singing away to their heart's content, and really looking forward to the game. The game didn't kick off till 8 o'clock, and these lads were out at 11 o'clock in the morning, so they were certainly down to enjoy themselves, and certainly they did that. And like, their team gave them everything to shout about as well. They were absolutely fantastic, weren't they?
It was unbelievable. I mean, I saw a lot of those scenes on Twitter and social media last night. There was lads diving through puddles on the ground and all sorts of stuff going on. The Scottish lads. And you could tell they'd been out since 11 o'clock that morning. But, you know, the atmosphere was incredible. But I tell you what, in my mind, they should have won it. They were absolutely brilliant. They had the most chances. And I really thought they were going to do it. I just thought they were going to sneak that one goal. Because you see, in weather like that as well, with the rain, I mean, one kick could just go astray. And, you know, Pickett made one amazing save off his bootlaces to the right one stage as well. Just I thought that one was buried. The other one off the line as well, the header off the line just to save. It's, there was so many chances, so many things. So they'll feel hard done by today, even though a draw will feel like a win for the Scots.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And a bit of a wake-up call for England. I think, you know, a lot of people talking about, you know, they got a great chance to win this year. And you would think so. I mean, they've got a good squad. They've got a lot of good young players. But sort of, I don't think he knows his best team. I mean, he never played Jadon Sancho. He was on the bench. You know, he took off Harry Carey, came as poor. Just the whole team were very, very flat last night, weren't they? So, sometimes in a way that, you know, I mean, you'll be witness to this, that you need a little bit of shake-up as well, even though, you know, when there's a lot of pressure on England, and particularly playing at Wembley, playing at home as well. And it might be sort of kick up the backside for them. But then, you know, it might be that the pressure might be too much for them playing at home as well.
Yeah, but you see, Ken, I don't know. I think they desperately needed a win last night. So, I mean, all of the pundits are ripping them apart after the game. Everybody's putting that pressure on. And they didn't really play well against Croatia either. I mean, a 1-0 win, fair enough, but they didn't play well. I mean, they didn't...
No, it was kind of...
They were almost lucky to get that result as well. And now they've got a 0-0 draw against Scotland. And... you know, it doesn't feel like they're on their way to going to do the job easy. Like in Czech Republic,
they're
no slouches at all. Like they're a really solid side. So I'd be worried for England. I really would.
Yeah, absolutely, and particularly when they play, if they do win the group, say if they do beat the Czechs or even draw against the Czechs, if they win the group, I think they'll play the second of the group of death, which might be Germany.
Yeah.
You know, so they could have, and if they don't win the group, they could end up playing France if France win their group. So, you know, that match will be it's a difficult path for them. So unless they get their act together, you know, they won't be doing anything. I thought they were very, very poor last night, very disappointing. Harry Kane was way off the pace, wasn't he? Which was, you know, he's putting himself in the shop window for this summer, but it, you know, with, on that performance, there won't be many. Well, knocking down his door, you know.
Roy Keane was talking about
he was brilliant last night, Roy Keane, wasn't he?
But,
I love him. He's absolute gold. He's television gold. He should have scored. He said it about four times.
Yeah, exactly.
He said it about four times.
Yeah.
I was cracking up.
No, it's absolutely brilliant. But like, you know, himself and Souness and all the rest of them, they're having a right go off game. They're saying he doesn't look right. And I mean, you know, obviously he's their main talisman. But you know, to bring it on Grealish and all that, it's just hard to see why they're not clicking though. There's so much talent there, like.
There's so much talent, yeah. I mean, Raheem Sterling, you know, Mason Mount, even Phil Foden, I don't know why he took off Foden last night, to be honest. Because when he gets the ball, he's
dangerous
electric
the
pace,
whole time.
You know, he's very talented, you know, and you can see he's always looking to try and beat a player.
Mm.
But there wasn't many players on that England side trying to go by players, break the lines and get it to the boy line, cross it in. I mean, it didn't happen very often, you know. But, but I mean, the Euros overall, I think it'd been fantastic. You know, Ronaldo was brilliant during the week. His second goal was amazing. You know, the Germans and the French and the Italians. I thought the Italians
Italy
were fantastic.
Italy are absolutely brilliant. That 3-0 over Switzerland was class.
Yeah.
They never looked like they were in any danger. You know, they've got your man Locatelli. I mean, where did he come from with those bangers of goals? It's unbelievable. But the way I know Chiellini got injured and his goal was disallowed and all that kind of stuff. But like, their back four are amazing. Spinazzola is unbelievable. He's absolutely incredible. He's everywhere up and down the pitch. The one thing I noticed about Italy that really stood out to me is their fitness levels seem to be off the charts because they're outrunning everybody else. And you see the likes of Berardi and Immobile and Insigne and these guys getting back into defensive positions and helping out.
Yeah.
And the difference last night, I thought, a perfect example was the same with the Scots. The Scots just kept going the whole time. They kept getting back, kept helping out when things went wrong. And the English lads were walking. And you saw that with so many other teams as well. I think Italy are, Mancini has them absolutely on fire at the minute.
Yeah, he does. He's a great manager as well. And he's very sort of enigmatic, isn't he? On the pitch side. Like, you know, even though we're 2 or 3 nil, he's still shouting at them, still berating them. But
he's
great.
He's the perfect Italian.
Motivating them all the time.
But he's the perfect Italian look of him. do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, everything about him is that look of the kind of slim build and all that kind of stuff. And the way his hands are going the whole time. Everything about him screams to you. Yeah, you should be the Italian.
It's like he just walked off the Milan catwalk as well.
The fashion, that's it. You need that. You have to have that. But
He looks younger now than he did when he was managing City about 10 years ago.
I agree. And what about the Denmark-Belgium game? I mean, how difficult is that for them coming out, Denmark, after everything that happened?
Yeah.
And they played brilliant.
They did.
And in all honesty, Belgium were out of the game until they brought on De Bruyne.
The
difference.
De Bruyne's a class player, isn't he? A lot of the teams, I mean, Belgium is another example of a team that could go all the way. You know, I mean, they're ranked highest in the world now, number one. You know, they've got a litany of great players, you know, and really, and De Bruyne would be the star man, you know. Hazard, of course, as well, is in there, but De Bruyne is just world class, you know. He could turn a game on a sixpence, you know, and he's just he's got such a wonderful vision of passing and shooting, and just his overall play is just magnificent. It's great to see, like, you know.
Absolutely.
So I think it's been fantastic, you know. I can't wait for, you know, Germany, Portugal,
the big one today,
you know, as well today, and France, Hungary. I think a lot of the teams, a lot of classy players. It's just great. It's great to have sport, and most importantly, Reg, is the fact that the fans are back in as well. How what a difference that makes, doesn't it? You know?
And to everything, to the viewing of it makes such a difference, because you can sense the atmosphere. Like, for example, in that, you know, I think there was 55,000 people for one of the Hungary games, was it, or Denmark, or one of those.
Oh, yeah.
You could see how that pressure of being... And like, don't forget, these players have been playing matches in front of nobody for the last 10 months. So that adds a whole new level of pressure on them, and it's how, what team is going to react to that best, and how they're going to recover and manage all of that kind of stuff. And it seems to be for some of the bigger teams. Like, for example, Spain have been very disappointing. They were very bad in that first game, and they've got to really come out tonight, and there's massive pressure on them to get a result against Poland, especially, you know, given some of the selection issues. Like, there's war going on, I believe, in Spain over Ramos and things like that, you know. So But what about Portugal and Germany?
But it's a really good point you make, you know, that the fact that they haven't been playing in front of crowds, now all of a sudden they are in the crowd. And that can work both ways, isn't it? You can get a bit nervous, or it can really get behind you and really inspire you, you know. But it's the top players that will, you know, they won't sort of crow into themselves. They'll express themselves even more in front of crowds. And Ronaldo is a great example of that, isn't he? Stop. You know,
he loves it.
I mean, he keeps on going. Like, I mean, what is he, 36 or 7 now, is he?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's still got amazing energy. He doesn't do the runs like he used to, but he certainly loves the showmanship. And I love the bit where he got into the press conference and started moving the Coca-Cola bottles. And then everybody started to do it to him. There's a whole array of players. And then one of the managers came in. He opened the Coca-Cola bottle and started drinking it.
He must have shares. The 4 billion wiped off last week in Coca-Cola shares because of it. So your man must have a few shares of Coke, tried to get them back up again. But it's been fabulous. It's really been it's been the best Euros I can remember for a long time. The quality of football has been off the charts as well.
Really, who's your team? Who's your fancy?
Portugal are my team from the beginning. I want them to win. Like, you know, we don't have anybody in it, obviously, with no Irish team. So I just love Portugal as a country. So I said from the start, I'm back in Portugal. They're my team. I want them to go. And win it. And I don't know. I don't feel as confident as I did. I was pretty confident pre-tournament, but when I've seen Italy now, and the Dutch as well, they're kind of, they've surprised me a lot, the Dutch. They're kind of under the radar a little bit, but they've got some seriously good players. They've got, you know, loads of talent there, and the speed at which they play, you know. I mean, 2-0 against Austria the other night, wasn't it? Like, De Boer seems to have them really well lined up. Depay's a good player.
And of course, they had that 3-2 in the first match as well. So.
Yeah. Now, their defence was a bit questionable in that first one. You know, they went 2-0 up and then they let them back in. But they got the job done in the end. But your man Dumfries, the speed of him, you know. Absolutely incredible. But I think they're the dark horses, the Dutch. Yeah. They could do something. But
I mean, it'd be amazing when all the qualifying is stopped and then it gets into the knockout stages, you know what I mean? Then the teams will come up. That's when they really sort of come to the fore. You know, you're going to have some cracking matches against each other, you know. I have France. I have a little sort of wager on France and a little wager on Portugal. And I put a little wager on the Ukraine as well. 130-1 is an outsider. So hopefully they'll qualify. They did win the other night. Hopefully they'll qualify.
North Macedonia the other night.
France
have been disappointing for me so far. I just haven't seen, you know, I know, look, they got that 1-0 win over Germany, but I thought Germany should have beaten them. Definitely should have got a draw against them. You know, so they've been disappointing. I no doubt they'll win today. I don't expect there to be any surprises against Hungary at all. I think they'll win that one comfortably, but they haven't really clicked as of yet, but maybe we'll see more of it today. But definitely the Italians have been the shock ones for me. Just seem to be so together and so with it.
Yeah, exactly. And they've had a really good, they've been unbeaten now, and I think 28, is it 28 games or something like that? Yeah, which is an incredible record, you know.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, now it's really boiling up nicely. I'm really looking forward to today now and some more of the games and, you know, over the course of the next, like, 3 weeks or whatever, you know.
Yeah, well, we have, I know your other big passion is tennis, and we have Casey coming on after the break to talk about the upcoming Wimbledon tournament and to look back on the French Open as well. Well, Djokovic, I mean, he's not many people's favourite, you know. I suppose it's his temperament, the way he goes on, but he's absolutely incredible. And I mean, if you look at the semi-finals, they're billing it as one of the best of all time. He himself said it's up there in his top three games of all time, that semi-final against Nadal. You know, the way he came back and won it. And then, you know, he was tested in the final too.
Big time, yeah.
No question about it. But, what do you think? Wimbledon coming up, he has to be the favourite, I suppose.
He is. I mean, he's just a machine. And so many times, like, he's come back from that, you know, two sets down. And this is against that Tsitsipas, who's a really top player now, young player from Greece. Similar single-handed backhand, but a lot of flair, a lot of power. And to come back from that, I mean, it's just a machine. You know, you just, it probably, by the looks of it now, he's on 19, you know, with the Grand Slams, and both Federer and Nadal are on 20. And you would have to say he'll probably overtake them, probably become the best player of all time, you know. Yeah. And in a lot of people's eyes, like, Roger is obviously the more sort of nicer on the eye. Mm. You know, Nadal has won like 13, like, French Opens. And but I think Djokovic all around now, you know, between the hard court, the grass, and now the clay, where he's proven very successful now, and particularly against the best of all time, Nadal. Is just his all-round game is just, and his defense, it's just his energy levels are just off the charts. You know, it's hard to see him lose. But I think Federer, it'd be good to see Federer back. But I don't know, this might be Federer's last Wimbledon. You know, it might be one of those where he just bows out, you know, gracefully. I don't know how long more he can go on. You know, he's come back from a couple of injuries and, you know, at 39 he is now, so it's getting a little bit more difficult for him. But for me, he will always be the best. I don't know about you, but for me, he's always the best. You know?
I know, incredible, absolutely. And then, of course, I can't even pronounce the guy's name, the Greek lad, Tsitsipas or whatever.
Tsitsipas.
So, like, I mean, he'll be a bit of a dark horse as well in Wimbledon, you know, coming in feeling confident. I'd say he'll feel a bit sick too that he didn't get that French Open under the belt, but I suppose the experience and maybe being able to cancel it out, that, you know, that'll stand to him a little bit when it does come to Wimbledon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he likes the grass as well, although he hasn't been that successful at Wimbledon. I saw him lose on an outside court there a couple of years ago to a very lowly ranked Italian player. But I think he's one of the ones coming up, and Dominic Thiem as well, you know. And then you've got Alexander Zverev from Germany. So they're the new sort of batch coming through. And there's plenty more behind them as well. So, but Wimbledon be interesting, yeah. And I'm not quite sure whether they're allowing crowds in this year or small crowds. They must be allowing some.
I think Wimbledon. Yeah. If I'm not wrong, I think Wimbledon's going to be full. I'll check that now.
Yeah, but, it should be. Well, I mean, it should be. I mean, if they can have that after football, there should be crowds in at Wimbledon as well, which would be great as well, you know, because that'll make a big difference. But it's such a wonderful tournament. The old strawberries and creams and the old Pimm's lemonade.
You'll probably be at it. You normally find your way over there somewhere or other. You're blagging ticket somewhere.
I normally wiggle me way in there somewhere.
Yeah, selling the strawberries.
I'll be selling the strawberries. Yeah.
I know well what you're like. You'll have a little cart down the back lane. Come on, lads, over here. Wexford strawberries.
Straight from Wexford, these strawberries.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just looking at it. Yeah, there'll be full crowds. Wimbledon set for full capacity crowds on the final weekend. So there you go. That just proves it. So it will be brilliant. Okay, Ken, as always, brilliant chatting to you there. And we'll catch up with you again next week. Enjoy the matches now over the weekend. And it'll be a great week of football again. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
All right.
Okay, Rich.
No worries,
have a great weekend.
You too. Take
nice
care.
To you.
Mind
Cheers.
Yourself.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's our own Ken Doherty there, giving us all the latest. Like me, he's loving the Euros at the moment. It really is kicking off really well. Other headline news that's going on. Ireland will get their under-26 nations campaign underway this afternoon. Richie Murphy's side are taking on Scotland in Cardiff at 2 o'clock as they look to defend their title. Hooker Lee Barron and Scrum Durham half Ben Murphy were both ruled out of the tournament this week due to injury. Very unlucky on those two young players. Munster back row Alex Kendallin will captain the Irish side. And of course the Guinness Pro 14 Rainbow Cup final takes place this evening. The Benetton will be taking on the Bulls in Treviso from 5:30. A little bit of a shock, I'm sure, for tournament organisers. They wouldn't have expected Benetton to be the one from the Northern Hemisphere who were taking on the Bulls, but it should be an interesting match and a huge opportunity for Italian rugby to show what it's made of. So yeah, pressure on those guys, but I think they could really do well. And of course the referee is Frank Murphy, an Irishman, involved in that a little bit later on as well. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back we'll be talking to Owen Casey and looking forward to the tennis. Don't go away. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. We'd love to hear from you. You can text us on the show on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Loads to come on the show still. We're going to be talking to Andrew Blair-White about the horse racing shortly enough. Ollie O'Brien as well is going to be talking to us from the Bowling League Ireland about the Open Day that they're going to be having soon. And we'll be talking to Alan Cawley, Declan Drake and Anne Leonard and Keith Begley as well. So loads to come in the show. Don't go anywhere. It's time to turn our attention to tennis indeed now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Owen Casey. Good morning, Owen. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, been brilliant weeks of sport. Really enjoying getting back into it. The tennis was on a different level, it has to be said, in the French Open. And I think that semi-final in most people's minds was probably one of the greatest. I know Djokovic himself said it was probably up there in the top three games he's ever played. And then he went on to win it after coming back from pressure there as well. So it was a good Open.
Absolutely. His match with Nadal would be, I mean, I've got about five, I have my top five matches of all time, and that's certainly gone into one of the top five. It was like, I think last year's match was kind of a difficult one. It's played at the wrong time of the year in October. The weather's cooler. It's played kind of nighttime under the roof, etc. No crowd. This year you had the crowd. And that was one of the talking points. I was thinking, what's going to happen when this, because the first three, each set was taking an hour long. And they start the matches at 8 with curfew at 10:30 or 11. So at the very best, you're only going to get three sets in, and these guys aren't going to beat each other in straight sets. So obviously they extended it, but it was an absolute thriller. I think they were probably expecting it to go to five sets. That's why they got the dispensation to leave the crowd there. But it was an absolute epic match.
They'd have had some job trying to get them out.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. Like, even in other matches where, you know, I mean, Berrettini, I think, played Djokovic the round before that. Mm. And there wouldn't have been half as many people. Yeah. But they were still booing, but they got them out. But, like, you know, these are two iconic players playing each other in an absolute monster battle. And there's 5,000 people there. That would have been taking a long time to get them out, because some would go quite quickly, but others would be defiant, as the French are.
Absolutely.
So, it was a good call. Good call. It also gave a good atmosphere to the match, you know.
It did indeed, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a funny thing, Owen. I listened to various different chats about the tennis during the week, and the theme that kept coming through was just that Djokovic isn't liked, and it's a strange one, because like Federer is the darling, Nadal is the kind of cool darling, but Djokovic, he just can't. And like, it looks like in all likelihood he's going to go on to be the greatest, you know, title holder. And what is it? Why is that?
He's the ugly sister. Yeah. Simple as. I think, you know, when he was kind of, you know, in his earlier ages, he was messing around, doing a lot of joking around, and, you know, people liked him for that. Obviously, he got serious and started winning. I don't know. I think it's the fact that he wants to be liked that people don't like him. Also, too, if you read across, I mean, there's lots of things out there. Anytime he's losing, he goes to either the toilet or a trainer. Right? Now, that's wrong. That's kind of gamesmanship.
Yeah.
I understand, you know, in this particular match, particularly in the finals, they're playing outdoors in the heat. After the second set, he went in and changed his clothes. It didn't take 10 minutes to take your shirt off and a pair of T-shirts off and change, you know, whatever you have to change. Mm. If I was, you know, if you're to change from one outfit to another, you know, and you're to do it, if you said, right, you got 3 minutes to do it, you do it inside 3 minutes. He took an awful long time. And he does this, the same with Berrettini. Anytime he's losing,
Right.
He goes to kind of this gamesmanship stuff, and I think a lot of the public don't like that.
Okay.
You know, like Nadal's losing, fine. Yeah. He gets on with it. He keeps playing. You know, whereas he kind of starts acting up, and so I think that kind of gets a few people up as well. And also, he's publicly said it. He doesn't understand why he's not liked. So if you come out with those statements, you're just pouring petrol on the fire.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. What about then Wimbledon? Of course, it starts on the 28th of June. He will be favourite. You know, that's expected. But Federer coming back, 39 years of age, coming back from injury. There's lots of other players that will be putting under pressure as well. The shift from clay to grass. What are your thoughts about Wimbledon and who do you think is going to hold the
title? Okay, so yeah, Nadal's not playing. He's pulling out of that in the Olympics. Not Djokovic, but Federer lost in Hal. He's been winning Hal with his eyes closed for I don't know how many years. So he's not in form. So it's going to be quite open, I think. Thiem is kind of all over the place. He's kind of going through a questioning patch. He's worked so hard to win his Grand Slam. He won his Grand Slam at the Open last year, US, and now suddenly he's kind of, well, what's next? Well, there's more to be won, but he's finding that hard. So, you know, Djokovic is the screaming favourite. Mm. However, you know, Riley Opelka, John Isner, Berrettini, all these guys with huge serves can cause problems because, you know, you're going into a tiebreak, and in a game, if I'm playing a match and I go down love 30 in my service game, I could still win it. But in a tiebreaker, if you lose 2 points, then the other guy gets to serve. You can have a 4-point swing straight away.
Mm.
So that's where it becomes very tricky. Very, very tricky. It depends on the weather as well. If the weather's nice, the courts become slower because they're drying out. The sun is, you know, baking them. But if the weather's overcast and the covers are on, the courts stay moist and becomes very low bouncing and greasy. So there's a fair few variables to consider here. I know the center court, number one court, have a roof on it, but the rest of them don't. So if you get an unlucky court, it could spell trouble.
Okay. Your thoughts overall? I mean, they're looking to get the crowds back in. It's been sort of, it's such an iconic part of the summer. This feels a little bit to me like Wimbledon is sort of the, I know the Euros are on at the moment, but it feels a little bit like the return to normality, if I could say that. You know, Wimbledon's on, there's crowds there, it's the tennis, we're back.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is synonymous with strawberries and Pims and champagne and, you know, nice dresses and suits and hats and so on and so on. Yeah. But I also, too, Wimbledon were smart. Out of the four majors, they're the only ones that have pandemic insurance.
Okay.
That's why they didn't need to put theirs on. All the national bodies, US Open, French, England, Australia, their budgets come from the Grand Slams. So Wimbledon didn't need to put theirs on. So that's kind of why they weren't in a rush, whereas the others were.
Mm.
So for me, you know, I love Wimbledon. It's obviously across the way. I've gone through it a few times. Love the kind of tennis. It's quick. It's not arduous and slow. It is exciting. Some people say it's boring, but it's not, because there is an art in serving, returning, anticipation, the types of stuff you need to do on it. So, you know, every surface has its kind of tactics. And Wimbledon, it is, you know, it comes down to a lot of variables just outside of tennis. So I'm excited about watching it.
Mm.
And, you know, Djokovic wins this. He's getting closer to the two boys to be the greatest of all time. And he's younger, and he's, you know, he's won all the slams twice now in terms of he's won the French twice. Like, you know, to win a slam, you got to win the four of them in a calendar year. So obviously it's not going to, well, it might happen this year because of, last year didn't happen because Wimbledon wasn't on in COVID.
Mm.
But he's won them quite a lot. So he is the man to beat. And, you know, like him or love him, you know, you can't disagree with, he is, I think he's the best of all time.
Absolutely. Okay, well, in terms of skill levels, I love watching the women's game. It just, you know, there's more rallies. It's for me, it's a more enjoyable game. And in the French Open, we saw Krejcikova getting the victory over Pavlyuchenkova, and it's you know, I think it's only that's her first slam title, isn't it, in five majors?
Yeah. I tell you what, that's the thing, the women's game, you're seeing more and more like different people winning tournaments.
Yes.
Like Svenska, I would have thought was odds on favourite because she was playing really, really well, but obviously didn't play a great game against the Greek girl Sakari. But the girl who won the French Open, the fact that she won the singles and the doubles, which is very unique, because in the men's game, you don't get the lads playing doubles.
Yes.
All the big guys just play singles from a money point of view, and obviously from an energy point of view, because you're playing five sets singles and three sets doubles. So in one day, you could play eight sets.
Yeah.
But the fact that she actually did play the actual doubles and singles, that's an amazing feat. And like from a physicality point of view, it shows how good a shape she was in to pull that off, because her matches weren't against Sicari in the semis, three sets. It's not like she had a 6-3, 6-3 match every time. So it shows you how much they're starting to put in terms of they're starting to take care of their bodies and put in that type of energy and effort to keep them fit so they can do this type of stuff. So it's a credit. It really is. It's great to see.
Yeah, and as you said, it's such an array of different players. You're seeing new faces and new talent all the time coming up in the women's game, and it seems to be that you can get an upset or a surprise. Who do you think? Is that the million-dollar question, is it?
Oh, if you gave me a tenner, I wouldn't know who to put it on.
No.
No, it's because you know, you got to say, like, Williams is pretty good on the surface, but again, you know, not playing great. I don't know. I wouldn't. I'd be telling you a lie if I knew who was even close to winning it or had a chance.
Right.
But I think anybody can win it. I wouldn't say, well, you know, Pliskova is good on this stuff because she plays flat. Kitova is good because she's got, you know, big serve and so on, lefty. But none of them are in form.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the other thing. You know, it'd be different if they're coming in with a bit of form, but they're not. And so it's hard to say, well, these guys are going to win.
Yeah, well, one way or the other, it'll be an amazing tournament to watch and something that we really look forward to seeing. Okay. Oh, and that's excellent. We might talk to you next week when we get a little bit closer to Wimbledon and see how things are going with that. And thanks a lot for everything this morning.
Brilliant, Reggie. Thank you. Take care. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. Take care. That's Owen Casey there giving us his thoughts on all of the tennis. The women's is such a difficult one to pick. There's so many class players in there the whole time, and it's a tricky one. And in the men's, it's a little bit more straightforward. But I don't know. I have a little feeling there could be a surprise or two in the men's game this time around as well. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Ollie O'Brien of the Bowling League of Ireland. Interesting chat with him coming up about the history to sport and also about the National Open days that they're going to be running in June. Don't go away. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVant.ie here every week. And you can text us on the show on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp 087 188 1068. Just to say as well, we normally would have our own Deirdre Smith on talking about the golf. She can't be with us this week because, of course, Deirdre, who's one of the leading amateurs, is in the Irish Ladies Closed Championship in Ballybunion. Deirdre is down to the last 16 and playing Áine Donegan from Lee Hinch this morning. So the very best of luck to you, Deirdre. Go out and get the job done. Now here on Dublin's Talking Sport, we love to bring different types of sport to you, and this week we're happy to be talking to Ollie O'Brien of the Bowling League of Ireland. Good morning, Ollie. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. I'm great, and you?
Ah, very well, thanks. Loads going on. The weather is cleared up nicely, and
yep,
sport is everywhere, and I'm delighted to have you on to talk about a sport that I actually would have seen quite a lot of growing up, because I'm from Bray originally, living in Greystones now, and in both places we have bowling greens, quite good ones, but from what I can see looking in through the fence at what's going
indeed
on inside.
So
it's quite a popular sport around the place, and maybe one that people don't know about. Tell me a little bit about the history of it.
Yeah, bowls probably started in Dublin around the 1890s or so. Kenilworth Bowling Club, which now actually plays in Grosvenor Square in Rathmines, they were founded in the 1890s, and then gradually clubs started getting founded in the early part of the 20th century. I think the growth of the game was slightly hindered, possibly by the fact that it's just easier and cheaper and lower resources to tend a playing pitch rather than a bowling green. That obviously you just need more, you need to do more work on it. And of course, that time, late 19th century, first half of the 20th century, was also the time that the GA was expanding massively. And, you know, there's only so many players, there's only so much resource out there. And we're probably just a little bit slower. You know, if we contrast, say, down south with up north, they have a multiple of the number of clubs we have. We've about 30. I mean, up north, they must have, 80, 90, 100 clubs.
Yeah.
In obviously clearly a smaller smaller population. But in recent years, we're still seeing new clubs being founded in the Republic, and a lot of the new clubs are play on a synthetic surface, so therefore they can play all year round. The purists among us obviously prefer grass, but it's a relatively short season from really only April to September. And then there's also you can have an indoor synthetic surface, full size, we just don't have one yet, but hopefully in the next number of years we may get one here. And then there's also a short mat form of the game that I don't know much about, but it's a thriving form of the game. It's played indoors with just mats that are rolled out, it has all sorts of its own leagues and things as well.
I suppose, Ollie, like everything, visibility is crucial to sport. Now, I'd remember well, the BBC used to have bowls on the television and you'd watch it and it was the people there in their whites, whether it be indoor or outdoor. And it was the type of game that would suck you in. You know, you're kind of going, I'm not going to watch that or whatever. And the next thing is you're looking at them rolling up to the jack and knocking balls out of the way and the strategy behind it. A bit like curling was, you know, a number of years back in the Olympics, something you'd never have seen before and you got drawn into. I suppose that's a big part of it, trying to get the visibility. And that's what the Open Day is about, that you're running on the 25th, 26th and 27th of June.
We are, people, if they want to see where their local club is, I just Google Lawn Bowls or Bowls, or else go on the Bowling League of Ireland website, which is irishlawnbowls.ie, and you'll get all the details of where the nearest club is. And you're right, it's about visibility, but it's more than visibility. It's about converting visibility into people maybe having the courage to walk in and ask, can they try to play? I know you've lived in Greystones for a long time, and you probably walk past Greystones Bowling Club.
I've never
on
been
any
in
number
it.
Of occasions, and you've never been in it. So
exactly.
Essentially, that's what the Open Weekend's about, Reggie. It's just about saying to people, you don't have to ring up, you don't have to make an appointment, you don't need to have any gear. Just a pair of flat shoes or runners, and we'll provide the bowls. We'll provide you with a very, very small bit of coaching that you need in order to be able to go out and bowl immediately. And of course, that's one of the joys of bowls, that not only is it conceptually very simple and the rules are very, very easy to understand, but also it's one of the few sports that the first time you play it, you can do it. You go out and the first time you play golf and you can barely make contact with the ball or tennis or whatever. But with bowls, it's just, you simply just stand on a mat. You hold a bowl in your hand in a certain way that's quite straightforward, and you bowl it out and it curves. And the skill of the game is matching the degree of the curve with the length of the, as we call it, the jack, the little ball that you're bowling to. And that's really all there is to it.
And Ollie, do you have difficulty, perception-wise, it might be something that people would look at and they, rightly or wrongly, like say, well, that's for older people. It's kind of, it has that maybe stigma attached to it. Do you have difficulty attracting younger people to the game?
I agree. Now, we've moved a long way. I mean, I'm playing about 25 years and I have horrific memories of when I started playing, and most of the players would wear a white shirt and tie, club tie, when they were actually playing the match. Now we've come a long, long way from that. But yes, it is a problem. I would often say that the places that we tend to recruit from, or the communities we tend to recruit from, are sons and daughters of existing players. At people who play in multi-sports clubs, and maybe they'll play golf or rugby or whatever in a multi-sports club that also has a bowling section. Yeah. And when the old joints start giving out, they move over to the bowls. And then there are people who are enthusiastically playing other games and get ill or injured or whatever. And bowls is a very, very playable game. And it's also very good for core strength and flexibility. It is a game that you can genuinely play into your 80s.
Yeah.
We have a member who played for our club in one of its teams last Monday night, and I think he's 90 this year, and he's still bowling away, and it's a huge part of his life.
Huge.
But there is an issue with that, but also at the same time, we have quite a lot of young, really, really good players playing in my own club. There are two young players, one turning 21 this year and one, I think, maybe turning 30 this year, both of whom have won British Isles singles titles. So there's a great pathway for you take it up young, get good. The Bowling League of Ireland and the Irish Bowling Association, which controls the game on a 32 county basis, it has real pathways for people who show a bit of talent, and there's all sorts of elite academies and various things that they can go to, and there's a great future in it. Absolutely. Great future in it.
Well, it certainly sounds good. I want to wish you the very best of luck with your open day. I'll give it again. It's on the 25th, 26th and 27th of June. Ollie, thank you so much for joining
Reggie,
us this morning.
Yeah, thanks very much, Reggie. Maybe you might come down and have a game with us one day, and you might even give us another mention next Saturday. Okay?
I'll do my best. Take care. All the best,
you're
Ollie.
A gent. Reggie. Take weekend. Care.
All the best. That's Ollie O'Brien there from the League of Ireland's Development Committee talking about the bowls in Ireland. Now, this week our racing pundit, contributor Andrew Blair White, couldn't make it into the show live, so instead he chatted with producer Jane a little bit earlier, and here's the review of this week's horse racing and, of course, his lucky 15.
Yeah, so obviously it's been a big week with Royal Ascot on, and there's been some fantastic performances over there. I think for Irish people watching and for Irish trainers, it's a massive thing. It's no different to the Cheltenham Festival or the Aintree Festival for jumps. So the major performances was great to see Poetic Flair and Jim Bulger win the big race on the Tuesday. Poetic Flair's a remarkable horse, having won the English 2000 Guineas. He then went on to and finished down the field in France, but then was second in the Irish 2000 Guineas. So I think people were a little bit sceptical about maybe just how good he was. But he's gone and won the St. James's Palace by 5.5 lengths, which is a super performance, and blown a completely good field away. Jesse Harrington had the second, actually, in that race, a horse called Lucky Vega, who's been subsequently retired to stud, which is a bit of a shame because he's an excellent horse in his own right, but he'll have a good now time at stud down in Australia, and hopefully we'll see his progeny soon enough. So that was great to see. And moving on to Wednesday, then we saw Love reappear. Love was obviously one of the best horses in training last year for Aidan O'Brien. She was superb in the Prince of Wales Stakes. She was tough out in front. Didn't look like she was going to win for the majority of that race, and still has found enough to win. And then yesterday's big performance, the Gold Cup. I think a lot of people obviously wanted Stradivarius to go and do it for a fourth time in a row and equaling Yates. But it was instead a brilliant ride from Joe Fanning on Subjectivist that won the race. It's brilliant for Joe Fanning. He's probably one of these guys. He's been around the game for an awful long time, goes under the radar, but he's an excellent jockey and a well-respected individual. And he gave Subjectivist a super ride and a willing partner. So really good to see, and some fantastic results over the entirety of the week at Ascot.
What should we be looking forward to or looking ahead to this weekend?
Yeah, so there's some great racing at Ascot on Saturday. Fingers crossed all goes ahead as scheduled. And the main race is the Diamond Jubilee Stakes, a 6-furlong race for Group 1 horses. A horse I quite like in this is Dream of Dreams for Sir Michael Stout and Ryan Moore. He's actually finished second in this race the past 2 years. He's a Group 1 horse. And the problem with this race is there's an awful lot of these horses. You don't know whether they're quite proven at Group 1 level. Ed Walker's Starman is in there. Very interesting to see whether he takes his chance in this lineup, considering the ground conditions have changed. The ground conditions changing will be of no odds to Dream of Dreams. So hopefully he runs a massive race. Also, the Hardwick Stakes over 1.5 miles is another big race, a Group 2 event. There could be plenty of chances in this, but I quite like Sir Ron Priestley in this for Mark Johnson and Franny Norton. He was a little bit disappointing at York the last time, but if you forgive him that, previous to that, he beat Pile Driver at Newmarket, which was a super effort. And, you know, that form has been well boosted with Pile Driver winning the Coronation Cup at Epsom. So hopefully if Sir Ron Priestley gets back to that type of form, he'd have to have a chance. He's in there at around 12, 14 to 1.
Okay, brilliant. And then the lucky 15, I know a lot of people will be glad that we got you on for this. You've been doing really well the last couple of weeks. What are this week's tips?
Yeah, so hopefully we have a decent enough week. Starting off in the 2:30 at Ascot, the Chesham Stakes, quite a short price, but I like Point Lonsdale in this. He's 5-4 for Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore. I think he should take all the beating. Should handle the ground, given he won at Maiden at the Curra by 5.5 lengths. The 4:20 at Ascot is that Diamond Jubilee Stakes. I like Dream of Dreams, as I said before, at 7-2 for Ryan Moore and Sir Michael Stout. Mm. The 5:35 at Ascot, a mile 2 handicap. A horse I've actually put up before, and he's run very well for us before, is King Frankel. I'm going to back him again here at 7-1. He should have a very good each-way chance. And in the 6:10, the final race at Ascot, and hopefully for some people, a winning finish at the Grand Vizier at 11-1. He won this race 2 years ago. He was beaten a neck in the race last year in second. He should be primed for this effort, and hopefully he runs a big race. At 11-1, he's just too big a price to let go.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you again for making the time.
Cheers. No worries, Jane.
Yes, and we will get that Lucky 15 up on all of our social media channels as well. I want to give a shout out, Leona Maguire, coming back after a little bit of a wobble. She's burning it up over there. Eagle Birdie to blast an 8-under-64 for a 3-shot lead in the LPGA Classic in Michigan. The County Cavan Star, of course, is chasing her maiden LPGA Tour win and backing up her first round of 65. She's well 3 shots clear at the moment in that and well in the lead. So we want to wish Leona Maguire the best of luck to that. It would be really wonderful if she could break her duck and get that get that first tour win, playing unbelievable golf at the moment. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break now, but still loads to come on the show. Don't go away. 106.8. And you're very welcome back to the second part of Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Keep your text messages coming in on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Okay, we're going to turn our attention now to sport and the psychology behind it. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by sports psychologist Keith Begley. Good morning, Keith. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Very well indeed. Very interested in this area because, it's somewhere something that's becoming more and more prevalent, people talking about it more and more. But it's not just about, the psychology of winning. It's all about the psychology of just being able to even manage your daily life. We had an interesting chat a number of weeks ago here on the show about Naomi Osaka, and one of our listeners rightly pointed out, we were kind of saying, well, it's part of the game, the media interviews, the pressure that comes with that. And, we might have been leaning towards the idea that it wasn't right that she's pulling out of those media interviews. But our listener rightly emailed into us and said to us that, just because people are celebrities and at the top of their game, that they don't have the same mental health problems or pressures that everybody else has. So it's becoming more of a factor, I suppose, for sports stars these days.
Absolutely, yeah. I think there's probably a couple of factors in that. And incidentally, I just seen this. Naomi Osaka just last night, I think, has pulled out of Wimbledon.
Right.
So, that's the latest one on top of the French Open there a couple of weeks ago. So, obviously, she's having difficulties, mental health difficulties. And, that listener, I suppose, pointed out this, in general population, you're talking about, in or around 1 in 4 at any given time struggling with either depression or anxiety or some mental health disorder. And, athletes are no different. They're normal people who just happen to be good at sport. And, they're probably put up on a pedestal and, everybody kind of thinks that they're highly resilient and, that they're infallible in lots of ways, but, they have the same life problems, I suppose, as that everybody else has,
And as a sports psychologist, Keith, when I played sport, I retired in 2007 from professional sport. When I played sport, social media wasn't a thing. It was Facebook, yes, fair enough, but there was no Twitter and there was none of that kind of stuff. Certainly none of the stuff we have today with the likes of Instagram and all these types of things. And I'm glad of that, personally. I'm glad that wasn't around for many reasons. But, you don't need that extra pressure. And I've often heard stories of lads coming in now after games and the first thing they're doing when they're going into the dressing room, rather than talking to their teammates and discussing the game and trying to work out what went went right or what went wrong is they take out their phone and they're looking for reviews and they're trying to see how many stars they got or what rating they got.
Yeah.
Like that type of pressure. As a sports psychologist, how do you deal with that for sports people that you're dealing with, you know, and help them to manage it?
Yeah, it's a hugely, like, I mean, the game has changed, Reggie, really, in the sense that, you know, from a mental perspective, from the player's perspective, and the pressure that kind of social media has brought, I suppose even beyond, if you go beyond the game itself, you know, it's, everybody's a journalist now. The nature of social media is such that, you know, there's a camera phone everywhere, you know, Twitter is everywhere. You know, fans can, you know, tag players in their comments if they want, if they so wish, in, I would say, for example, through Twitter or whatever social media. And, you know, the nature of it is such that it's all-encompassing. I suppose if you go back 10 years ago or pre-social media, the journalist had a job at the end of the game, and it was the journalist's job, and there was maybe a five-minute window where certain players would be pulled out, and, you know, that would be it. You know, so it might be whoever's put up in front of the media. And it was, you know, I suppose trained media who knew the line of what you could say and what you couldn't say, who were involved in the media, if you like. Now it's everybody, and everybody's opinion is listened to, because the nature, I suppose, of Twitter and different platforms, I suppose, allows people to comment. And even if you look at, say, for example, the likes of, without naming a newspaper, but there are some newspapers that will allow, we'll say, comments at the end of a given match report, you know, for people to express opinions. And they can, you know, run down different players and so on and so forth. So, I mean, players have to deal with the opinions of the fans now that they didn't have to deal with previously, if that makes sense.
And what do you say to them as a psychologist? What's your message to them on that? Because, I mean, back in the day when I was playing, you know, you'd often get coaches saying, look, don't read the papers, lads. You're not going to get anything good out of it or whatever. Now, you know, for the most part, people had a glance at it or had a look at it, but you were able to avoid it if you wanted, you know, and you knew yourself if you'd had a bad game, you'd just say, no, I don't need the hassle of it. I'm just going to focus on getting it right this week. And it certainly wouldn't be a barrage of abuse or anything else. It'd be one article in a paper and you'd know it might be there and you might hear it back to you. But now it's constant, like every single day, barrage of abuse. What do you say to your clients?
It's really about managing it. I suppose, you know, back in the day you could say don't read the paper, and if you didn't buy the paper, you couldn't read it really, you know. That was the nature of it at the time. But now, I suppose, with social media, lots of these players, like, I mean, if you go to high performance levels, right, they're all on social media, they're all on Twitter. There's an element of, if you like, you know, there's a, how would I put it? I suppose there's an element of an economic element to it, if that makes sense, in the sense that, you know, for other reasons, players are on Twitter, you know, in terms of endorsement of products and so on and so forth. So they're accessible in that way. They have loads of followers, and invariably, the more followers they get, the higher volume of, you know, in terms of money for endorsements and so on. So they're there in that sense. So it's kind of, I won't say it's open season for fans, but I mean, if they want to access players privately, they can, and they can tag them on Twitter. So, you know.
But Keith,
for example,
Keith, just on that point, you know, so this brings it right back to what we were talking about with Naomi Osaka. And this is the situation with all of these big players. You look at Ronaldo and what he can do by moving a bottle of Coca-Cola in a press conference. You look at the influence that these people have. But in turn, they're getting well paid for it. I mean, it comes down to every level of professional sport. Now, not everyone's in Ronaldo's league, but you know what I mean? It comes right down. So a lot of people would say, well, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If you want to be out there doing all of that, well, you're putting yourself out there, so you're open to it. And I mean, you know, it's hard to know what the right balance is.
Fair point. But I mean, you know, for someone with a mental health difficulty on the back of that, very often, you know, they don't see this mental health issue developing as such, and then it gets to a point where it's all-encompassing. And I'd like to think that in Naomi Osaka's case, like, I mean, what age is she, 22 or 23? You know, invariably, lots of these young sports stars, they come in at maybe whatever, 19, 20, or whatever point they get into senior sport, if you like. And all of a sudden, they're going from, you know, I suppose, not being all that well known, I suppose, internationally or nationally or whatever the level is, to all of a sudden have this huge stage. And, you know, an awful lot of these kids are not equipped to deal with this.
Yeah.
You know, they're not mature enough. And I think that's where we need to go in terms of equipping them properly if they are going to be put in that in this spotlight. You know, it's like, you know, you'd often see, I suppose, going back through years of, we'll say, people in the music industry, that they become like overnight sensations or whatever, and then they can't handle it and they turn to drink or drugs or whatever.
Mm.
The same is happening now in terms of sports stars who are getting this, I suppose, if you like, world exposure very, very quickly, because the nature of social media, if you like, is facilitating it, where, you know, everybody's a journalist. It's 24/7. If they go into a restaurant to have a meal, you know, it's, before it was someone coming up for an autograph and it was private and that was it. Now it's someone coming with a camera phone for a selfie. And if they do, you know, engage with them or whatever, now it's going viral through social media about what they're doing in their private lives, if you like.
And is there any way, you know, have you seen any other countries bring in sort of initiatives, or is there anything that we could be doing more of to try and alleviate that type of pressure that we're putting on sports people?
Yeah, I think the nature of abuse sometimes is very much... It's done in a way that, you know, very often it's anonymous.
Mm.
Okay, so these comments are anonymous. So I think no more than, I suppose, general social media in terms of bullying and people receiving messages anonymously or whatever,
mm.
I think that the government needs to do something about, if you hold a social media account, it's something around identification of the person, for example.
Yes.
So that it's not okay to set up a profile on a newspaper or a fake Twitter account or whatever, that it's traceable, for example, that, you know, we saw there previously with, say, with, for example, I'm not sure if the listeners might remember, there was an issue with Ian Wright.
Yes.
The pundit there in the UK, where he was I suppose, bullied, if you like, racially or otherwise. I don't know exactly, but it was actually an Irish, a young child, if you like.
Yeah.
But they found out who it was, and it ended up in court.
It did.
And or it was heading to court, at least, before maybe it was caught up.
No,
whatever.
It ended up, and there were charges brought and everything else. And in actual fact, a lot of people were speaking against Wright for actually taking it that far, because it was a young person and everything else. But his point was...
Yeah.
If we don't start to stand up on this, and if people don't start to make stance on it, it'll never change. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And I think it comes back to the, you know, we'll say regulations around identifying, you know, is it okay to throw out this abuse? And, you know, what would be wrong with a sports star who's receiving abuse, let it be a tennis player, a soccer player, or a GA player, or otherwise, you know, bringing a case against someone who's doing this, and, you know, on a constant basis, and, you know, social media is facilitating this.
It's
an absolute meat market for players, and it's very unfair. And while you might say, okay, they're endorsing this and they're getting money for this and that and the other, like, they haven't signed up to be bullied.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, simple change in regulations. And I'm not 100% sure what other governments have done around this, but I'm sure there is something that the government could do around, you know, this. And this isn't just for sports stars. This is for,
everybody.
This is happening with kids in school, you know, where anonymous bullying, anonymous accounts through different social media, Saraha, and different, you know, and it has caused huge, huge issues in terms of, you know, mental health issues for kids and going as far as suicide. Mm. You know, so it's not just, I suppose, sports stars that are subject to this. It's probably what we hear about more often.
Yeah.
Because they're in the media, but it's happening on a, you know, it's just, I suppose, the way of society. But social media has allowed to happen within society, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. It makes complete sense. Well, it seems like and it's been asked and called for on many occasions, some sort of accountability around all of these social media companies. And they do pay some talk to it, but I don't believe there's enough done in it. I think it'd be very easy to verify people's accounts, and it would make a huge difference. And I think, you know, education as well in schools, more around that and the effects of these things. They don't go on deaf ears, as they say. They do always land on somebody that gets affected by it. But Keith, it's an interesting area, and one we may have to come back to, because we don't have enough time to go into it in any more detail today. But I do appreciate chatting to you about it and getting your thoughts on it. So,
yeah,
we'll chat
my
to you.
My pleasure, Reggie.
Thank you very much.
Anytime. Take it easy. Have a nice day.
You too. That's Keith Begley there, sports psychologist, giving us his thought, on the mental health challenges in sport and the challenges facing athletes, and how maybe we can become a little bit more aware of it. We're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Anne Leonard, owner of Bikram Studio here in Dublin, about the benefits of hot yoga. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVant.ie. Keep your text messages coming in on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Well, 21st of June is World Yoga Day, and for those of you that didn't know it, and Bikram Yoga is a form of yoga that a friend, Paul O'Connell, has been talking about for many years. I know he takes part in it, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Anne Leonard, owner of a Bikram Yoga Studio. So good morning, Anne, how are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. I suppose we better start by telling us, what is Bikram Yoga?
Well, it's quite simple, really. It's 26 hatha yoga postures in the heat. So I suppose what defines us is the 40 degree heat and the high humidity. So it's a 90 minute class. Throughout it, it's the 40 degree heat.
Wow, 90 degrees, or 90 minutes.
90 minutes in 40 degrees.
That sounds, I wouldn't be great in the heat now, Anne, I have to be honest with you. What does that do for our mind and our bodies?
Well, everybody thinks that. It is tropical. But what it does is the capillaries dilate, the blood infuses to all parts of your body, and injuries heal. You know, you begin to feel, you actually feel so, so amazing at the end of the class. It's like you get a toothbrush and you take it to all your internal organs and you give them a good scrub. So I always say to people, it's like a bath, but from the inside out. You know the way you feel really good after a bath sometimes? Well, this is like an internal bath. You're just cleaning everything inside of your body. You just feel so amazing at the end of it.
And look, I've watched lots of different types of yoga over the years. I've seen it, and some of it can be quite strenuous, and I certainly couldn't manage many of the positions myself at this stage. But, you know, is it a hard workout? Do you have to be very flexible or fit for it?
It is more, to be honest, it's more the mind. It's nothing really to do with flexibility. People always think that, oh gosh, you know, I have to wait till I stretch out a bit before I can come into a yoga class. No, you come into a yoga class to stretch, and it's incremental. Like, people come, like, for example, you're a rugby player, you'd come with strength, not flexibility. But over time, you'd build up the flexibility, and you get this nice balance of strength and flexibility, and then you're less prone to injury. So that, like, a lot of people come in with, they're over-flexible. Like, we've had people that can basically almost touch their head to the heels in their first class. I mean, that's probably a little bit of an exaggeration, but they're too flexible. They've got to build up a little bit of strength. So the whole thing we're looking for in yoga is balance. Okay. Balance between strength and flexibility, and that balances the body, and then you're less prone to disease and things like that.
Well, I mentioned Paul O'Connell has spoken about doing it before and how he likes it. What other types of sport does it really complement?
Well, do you know something? It complements everything. But actually, during the pandemic, after the first lockdown, we were allowed open for elite athletes. So basically, we had hockey players coming in, and also MMA fighters coming in. And also we had a ballerina who was stuck here with, she got marooned here during lockdown with her Irish boyfriend. So she was coming in, you know. So we have had, you know, we've had people who are basically people who want that, like, extra oomph, you know, to carry them through. So it's really good for your concentration levels. Like, we had Peter Queeley now. He is one of our regulars, and he just had his fight over New York there. But he said it really helps him with his concentration, you know, and also, you know, your general health and wellness. Like, you're less prone to injury, I think that, and also you have quicker recoup if you do get injured, which is inevitable in some of, I think it says MMA games. I've never seen them, but I've heard it's really tough.
It's very interesting in the sense that I've done cryotherapy treatments before, you know, where we've gone into like minus, I don't know, 140 or something in chambers for 2 minutes and come out. And the effect was that you're drawing the blood into your core to protect the vital organs and then you're flushing it back out again with fresh blood. Is this a similar idea in reverse?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly. Here's what we do in the heat. You stretch. And when you really stretch, there's exponential stretching, one compression one side and extension the other. And then when you release the body, it's the same concept, the fresh oxygenated blood flushes back into the organs. So say, for example, the pancreas. Mm. Once you squeeze and compress one side, and you can stretch and extend the kidneys at the same time, and they both work together. You know, it's really amazing. It's very, very holistic. It's not just one organ that's getting the benefit, several, but we hone in on each organ separately in the floor series. So the class is kind of 90 minutes long. The first 60 minutes is just a warm-up. It's the last 30 minutes where the real benefit, internal holistic benefit takes place. You know, all the organs, you know, blood jettisoning from one organ to the other. It's really, really beneficial, the last 30 minutes of the class.
Excellent. So what can people expect for their first Bikram yoga class if they went along to you?
Well, first class now, you have to come hydrated. You have to, you don't want to eat too close to class. Mm. And then, you know, you feel kind of euphoric. I know that sounds crazy, yeah, but at the end of the 90 minutes, you feel this euphoria. You feel, oh God, you let things go. You know, things that you thought were important are no longer important at the end of a 90-minute-long class. And it just really helps process things, you know. I mean, it can change things so simply, incrementally in your life, but over a period of time, your life just becomes so much easier and better. And you can see the wood from the trees much easier, you know.
And tell me, Anne, just to finish up, I mean, I can see 100% the benefits of the blood supply to injured areas, blah, 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 cleaning all the area up. What about internal organs, maybe like heart or blood pressure or, you know, people with diabetes or other types? Does it benefit those types of things?
Absolutely. Like any of the backward bends, squeeze and compress the kidneys. Yeah. And the kidneys are responsible for the amount of sodium they release into the blood supply. So basically, when you squeeze and you get the kidneys working to optimal level, the osmotic pressure is regulated. And so you're releasing correct amount of sodium into the blood supply. And that then helps, you know, normalize blood pressure. It, particularly the backward bends are good from lowering like low blood pressure to, you know, to regular. But it helps, all of the backward bending helps with blood pressure. You know, everything begins to regulate. I know it sounds crazy that the yoga class could do this, but basically over a period of time, all systems in the body regulate, even like an irregular heart rate. Everything begins to regulate. That's what we try to do. We try and regulate everything, kidneys, heart, lungs, and particularly now in the times we're living in, it's so important to have lungs. You know, our lung tissue is elastic. It wants to stretch. Yeah. So in the yoga class, you infuse more oxygen to the body, but also as well as having more oxygen in your blood supply that's brought to all parts of the body, you use it more effectively. Like I remember when I first began yoga, the teacher goes, you know, when you first come in, you know, your lungs zap up oxygen like a hungry dog, but then you regulate the lungs. You regulate the, you know, what you do with the oxygen throughout your body, because you work with the heart and the lungs together, you promote this marriage, and then the whole body works more effectively. You use less oxygen to perform the same task.
Well, it sounds very interesting. It might be something I'll take up and
you're
have a
very,
go at.
Very welcome now. You're very, because it's International Yoga Day now, Monday.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, you're very, very, very welcome.
It sounds wonderful. Where are you based, Anne, just so that we know?
We're based just over the bridge in Harold's Cross in the city, so.
Excellent stuff. Yeah. Okay. Well,
and
you're allowed back, you are?
Well, we're full schedule now, July 7th. Excellent. So July 7th now, that's, we're really, really looking forward to seeing everybody back.
Wonderful. Okay, well, I wish you the very best of luck with the return after COVID, and I'm sure there will be queues out the door because everybody will need to reset their bodies.
Well, hopefully you'll be at the top of it. Hopefully you'll be at the top of it.
No worries. Take care, Anne. Good to talk
Thanks
to you.
Thanks very much, Eddie. Take care.
All the best. That's Anne Leonard there, owner of Bikram Yoga Studio. Sounds really interesting. Yeah, I might well give it a go, see what it's all about. I'm sure there'll be people that'll pay to go and have a look at me doing that, but you never know. If it's good enough for Paul O'Connell, it's good enough for me. What do you reckon, Dick? Would you have a go at that?
Oh God, no.
No,
absolutely not. The only exercise I need is couch to fridge to couch. That does me, Reg.
Okay, well, fair enough. Each to their own, as they say. Each to their own. But it sounds interesting, and I'm always open to trying different things. Okay, it's been an interesting period of time. So good, so much joy around with the GA being back. I suppose we better do a bit of a review of the leagues with no final as such going on. I think the only final is in Division 5. What division?
There's Division 3 final today between Offaly and Derry, which again is a test event for Croke Park. I think it's 2,000 or something like that allowed in this afternoon.
Yeah.
They weren't scheduled to have one, but the two counties came together apparently and agreed to play it, which is great because the players, you know, deserve the opportunity to be able to play in Croke Park in a national final. They may not get another one too handy. So, kudos to both teams for that. And to the lucky ones who will be in attendance this evening as well.
Mm, absolutely. Okay, let's have a look back on the hurling first, I suppose. What do we make of the campaign?
Well, we played 5 games in Division 1B, Reg. We won 2 games, which we would have expected to have won, I think, in all fairness, against Laois and Antrim as well. But then we lost to Kilkenny, Clare and Wexford. Most recently at Chadwick's Wexford Park last Saturday, which was a disappointing loss because we spoke last week about the need for positive momentum going into Championship, which is next Saturday afternoon, by the way, down at Park Tailteann against Antrim as well. Unfortunately, we didn't get the bounce of a win there. So 2 wins out of 5. As I say, we would have expected to win 2. Hopefully, I've got something, one win at least from the other games. We didn't get it. So look, there's plenty for the management team to sit down in training the week just gone. And the week coming to plan for Antrim next week, I suppose. A couple of things, you know, who does he play in goal? Does he play Sean Brennan? Does he play Alan Nolan? The positioning of Chris Crummy and certain tactical things that have to be worked out as well. But it's fantastic to be looking forward to Championship at the right time of the year next week. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely, especially when the weather is coming up as good as it is at the moment. It always adds to it, I think. And I suppose the football, looking back on them as well, you know, It was kind of a little bit messy at the start of the season, I suppose, the way to describe it, with the disruption that they had to endure and all that kind of stuff, but coming good in the games themselves.
Yeah, they played all their league games away from Dublin this year, of course, and they beat Donegal in a meaningless enough game last week. Meaningless in the sense that obviously there was no league final at the end of it against Kerry, but an important game for them, I suppose, again, just to try a few things out and give players more game time. So as the Football Championship starts next Sunday, Wicklow are playing Wexford in the first round. That's significant for us because the winners of that will play Dublin on the first weekend in July. I think it's the 4th of July, if I'm not mistaken. And that, again, will be an away day for Dublin, as it has been in the Championship for the last number of years. It'll either be in Ockham or in Chadwick's Wexford Park. Now, the sight of the Dubs going to Ockham to play Championship football would be something else in a few weeks' time. Obviously, Wexford will have other ideas about that. But again, plenty for the management there to ponder. We hope Dean Rock can come back. He didn't play any part in the league. Keane O'Sullivan was the same. Stephen Cluxton as well. Of course, what's the position on him? So, as I say, plenty for the management to ponder, and they'll watch that game intently next Sunday afternoon to see who their opponents are. But again, plenty of competition for places in the squad. If you're fortunate enough to be in the squad, you have to maintain the level of performance to stay in it. And I mean, as regards getting in the first 15, well, you know, that's some achievement. But I think the likes of Cormac Costello certainly has done enough to earn himself a starting place in the Championship this year, Rich.
Absolutely. Yeah, Ockram. I'm actually going to Ashford tomorrow, would you believe, Declan. My son has taken up Gaelic. He's fallen in love with it, which I'm delighted about. So 1:30 tomorrow, his first ever game down in Ashford with the Aerog under 12s.
Fair play,
looking forward to
and
that.
Is he playing a bit of rugby as well, Reg?
No rugby. No. He hasn't taken to the rugby at all. Football, basketball and GAA now, and golf. So I think we'll
a Wicklow senior star of the future.
Yeah, well,
watch this space
as they say. Now it was great for the ladies as well, win over Mayo in the league semi-final. And you caught up with Lindsay Davey afterwards. Let's have a listen to that chat.
It was a very tough physical battle, which we were definitely expecting. There's some patches of play that were very good. First half, definitely a lot of mistakes that we kind of need to work on. But yeah, overall, we're very happy with the outcome.
The goals in the first half were key and gave you that cushion then for the second half that you never really looked back in.
Yeah, and I think that was something that was great. We had that kind of lead going into the second half, but I think we controlled it very well. But I think more importantly as well, we kept the scoreboard ticking, which was great.
and now the challenge of Cork again at Croke Park in a few weeks' time. It's been a great run of matches because you've played in major stadiums so far, like you, Parnell Park, obviously, Páirc Cliath, Semple Stadium here today, and now back in the big one, Croke Park again, for the first time since you won the four in a row last year.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think that's something with the LGFA. We've got some fantastic grounds to play in. You know, like I said, Páirc Cliath was the first time I got to play there, and even I think here today it's the first time I'm going to play in the same. So it's fantastic to be getting big stadiums like this, and I know it's only a small bit of a crowd, but it's lovely to have that bit more atmosphere back, and we're really looking forward now to the final, and there'll be I think 3,000 or something attendance figures, which would just be fantastic to be back playing in front of crowds again.
Yeah, but you stayed on to win more trophies this year, and you're halfway there, you're in another league final, your first since 2018.
Yeah, it's really like it's only our second league final that we've been in with Mick, so we're really looking forward to it. But yeah, we definitely have a lot that we need to go away and look at.
Feeling good about that final, are you, Dick?
Oh, looking forward to it immensely, Reg. 4-15 to 10 points to beat Mayo last week. I think that's a 17-point win if my mental arithmetic is right, which it never usually is.
No,
that's,
bang on.
That's why I need a calculator all these times. Fully charged one. But, the key thing was the scores in the first half. Dublin scored 6 times, Mayo scored 4 times. But 3 of Dublin's 6 scores were goals. Mm. And that was a key thing. Neve Heatherton, Jennifer Dunn of Coola, brilliant, outstanding year last year to earn her place in the team of the year. And Sinead Hearn grabbed 2 goals, the second one a penalty. Mind you, the sin binning of the Mayo player 10 minutes into the second half certainly didn't help their cause. But we spoke a couple of weeks ago about after Dublin's visit to Páirc Cliath, which they came through with a 1-point win, that there was a possibility of the sides meeting once, if not twice more in the year. And fortunately, we have the first of those occasions now next Saturday evening at Croke Park with a 7:30 start. It's going to be an epic battle, that's for sure.
And there are crowds going to be, she said, mentioned 3,000, yeah, maybe more people.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the actual figure, okay, but definitely there will be a crowd in attendance, as there indeed there is for the Camogie League final between Kilkenny and Galway, which takes place tomorrow. I think week by week, Reg, they're slowly are gradually increasing the crowd level. So it's 4,000 or 5,000, something like that, in there next week. But it'll be a golden ticket to get.
Okay, excellent stuff. In other news then, Wednesday sees the under-20s finally, how about after 6-7 months, getting their final?
Yeah, indeed. Managed by my own clubmate, Paul O'Brien from Crumlin, the Leinster final finally has been fixed. The 2020 Leinster final has been fixed versus Galway for O'Connor Park and Tullamore next Wednesday evening at 7:30. I'm not sure how many times this final has been postponed due to COVID-19, but Cork, who await in the All-Ireland final, there's no semi-finals this year, played the Munster final a couple of weeks before Christmas last year in Páirc Cliath, so that's the effect that it's had. Everyone connected with the squad, I'm sure, was just delighted now to have that date. They've been working on it or towards it for the last number of weeks, and we wish Paul and the boys every success down there on Wednesday night. As I say, a place in the All-Ireland final against Cork, it's a massive prize at the end of the hour.
Mm, absolutely. Anything else you want to mention before we
finish? Just a couple of more things. Mm-hmm. The draws for the 2021 Go Ahead Ireland Dublin Championships were made during the week, and we haven't time to go through it all, but just mention the county champions if we may. Ballymun Kickhams, who of course beat Ballyboden in the final impressively last year, are drawn in Group 3 against Thomas Davis, Clontarf and Skerry's Harps. At Coola, the county hurling champions under new management, Eddie Brennan is part of that team, of course the former Kilkenny great, they've drawn Kilmacud Crokes, Thomas Davis again, and St. Bridget's. That's all to start in the month of September. I must congratulate Hannah Tyrrell as well, who won the Croke Park LGFA Player of the Month award for May for her 3-12 in her 2 performances against Waterford and Tipperary.
Excellent stuff, Declan, as always. You're going to stay with me now because we're going to be doing the League of Ireland in a minute with Alan Cawley. We're going to take a break now, but when we come back, it will be football to the end of the show. Don't go away. Now, delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Very well. Enjoying the festivals of football that are going on at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely incredible. I'm going to start with the League of Ireland first, though, because I'll get to the Euros in a minute. And it was an interesting night last night. There's been, we've been blue in the face here talking about Dundalk and the woes and the ups and the downs. And they're kind of still things going on. Vinnie Perth being brought back into the club during the week when, you know, the job seemed to have been offered already elsewhere on Monday. So it's kind of just gone from weirder to weirder, isn't it?
It is, and I think there'll be plenty more ups and downs, Reggie, to talk about before the season is out, because as you say, some of the decisions have been bizarre really over the past number of months with Dundalk, and this was played out in public last week on Twitter because one news outlet put out a statement on Twitter last week saying that a certain manager was getting it, and then another journalist not long after 20 minutes was saying that a different manager was getting it, Vinny's coming back. So that's what disappointed me so much, Reggie, is because we've lauded Dundalk for so long and they've been so good, they've been such a story in Irish football, that all this has been played out in public on Twitter and different places, and rumours and all sorts of things being said, and it's been horrible to watch, really, and quite sad. But as you say, Vinny has gone back. Again, for me, it's a bit of a bizarre decision in the sense that he was sacked not long, I think over a year ago, and which I didn't think he should have been sacked. I think they should have held on to Vinny, and maybe this trouble shouldn't have started. But he was struggling at the time and got sacked. But now he's gone back in. Whether he'll be able to fix things, I'm not so sure, because I'm hearing different things in terms of the players weren't happy and all sorts of stuff, Reggie. So I think we're just going to have to watch on and see how this plays out for another few weeks. But I do think the fact that Vinny has had such experience of the club and knows the club inside out, hopefully he'll be able to grab it and as I say, show some leadership in the sense that just get things under control, because as I say, the way it's been played out has been really sad, Reggie, because they've been such a brilliant story, and for a club that has had such success, for it to end up like this, nobody wanted to see it. So I'd say whether Vinny can fix it, we're not so sure. At least he knows the club inside out, and he'll have a better chance than anyone you would think. And hopefully for all our sakes, because we do need a vibrant Dundalk in the league. We need them challenging Shamrock Rovers. We need them challenging the other teams. And considering all the success that they had and the money they earned, if the legacy was that the Peak Six would pull out at the end of the season and the ground still be in the condition it's in and the club in a mess, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, and a one-all draw against Longford certainly doesn't help the woes. Declan?
Yes, good morning, Al.
Morning, Declan.
Yeah, very well. Yes, at least Dundalk third from bottom at the moment of the table. But I look at two teams, Alan, Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians. They're meeting on Monday evening at Dalymount Park, the longest day of the year. It will be for whoever loses it, I'm sure. But between the two of them, they scored 9 goals last night. Rovers putting 4 past Waterford, having come from behind to do that. And what about Bowes? 5-0 against Drogheda and 4 more for Georgie Kelly.
Absolutely brilliant, Declan. It'll be a cracker on Monday night. The only thing, as we've been saying all along, pity it's not a full house, because those games over the last 2 or 3 years that Bowes have been obviously in touching distance of Shamrock Rovers, the atmosphere has been absolutely electric. It normally is in those Dublin derbies, as you know, but the fact that Bowes have been doing so well in the last couple of seasons has made those fixtures even better again. So it's a pity it wouldn't be a full house. But Bohemians, I've mentioned it a few times on the show, Declan. I've seen a lot of them and they've impressed me every time I've watched them. They've let themselves down, losing the odd goal here and there and defensive issues. But going forward, they've played as good a football as any team as I've seen. And even the result last week, if you go back to them losing and drawing in Derry and conceding in the 93rd minute, it was so disappointing. And it kind of was fitting in what's been going on with them all season. Because if they can get consistent at all, I think they're every bit as good as the teams that are just above them and they're capable of going on a run. Last night beating Drogheda, who were sitting forward at the table and everybody's speaking about 5-0, just tells you that. So I think Shamrock Rovers will be in for a tough night on Monday night and it should be an absolute cracker.
I have to say, I was at Richmond Park last night, St Patrick's Athletic defeating Sligo Rovers by 2-0. Very impressed with Pats last night from back to front. Alan, Sligo poor enough in the first half, definitely improved in the second half. But Stephen O'Donnell and Alan Matthews, they're just, what, 3 points off Rovers now. They have the momentum back, having had back-to-back wins since the break.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up, Declan, to be honest. But I watched the stream of it myself, and you're dead right. Pats were the better team, played very well. Sligo, and they were disappointing last week against Drogheda as well. So maybe the break, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, maybe the break came at the wrong time for them because they had a lot of momentum with them before the break. I think they won 4 under Trot or 5 under Trot. So it just goes to show how the break can help some clubs and maybe disadvantage others, because a lot of the clubs that it's helped, including Shamrock Rovers, they've got some players back who were injured as well. So, but that's just the look of the draw. But Pats last night, they were a good value for the win. Stephen O'Donnell's done a brilliant job. And we just need someone challenging Shamrock Rovers. Whether that's going to be Sligo now, I don't know, Declan. But I would have taken the top three at the start of the season for Sligo Rovers. I never had them down as title contenders. But St. Pat's have put themselves in a strong position to do that now as well. And hopefully they can sustain it. And I think they will, because we all know Stevie's drive and mentality. I think that's what he's instilling in Richmond Park at the moment. And he has a very good squad of players also. So hopefully they can sustain that.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, let's turn our attention now to the Euros. I've been absolutely glued to it, Alan. It's been, I don't know what it is. I always love the Euros. I said it to you last week, I love the Euros more than the World Cup, but this one has been absolutely incredible. Maybe it's just because we need something good. But last night's game again, England versus Scotland, it was the talking point for everybody here. I think everybody was wearing blue last night. They deserve to win it, if we're honest, Scotland, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm the same, Reggie. I've loved it, and I love the Euros as well. It's a brilliant competition. I loved it with the 16. I know it's been expanded out to 24, but we can live with that as well. But so far, it's been absolutely brilliant. And the game last night, Scotland were absolutely outstanding. I said to you last week about England, and I gave them every chance. Against Scotland, Reggie, or against Croatia in the first game, they were efficient and professional and put in a good performance. So by no means did they blow anyone away, but I thought they'd get stronger as the competition went on. Last night, I thought we'd see evidence of that against Scotland and that they would blow them out of the water. But Scotland were absolutely outstanding. And I think the decision Steve Clark made, particularly bringing back in Billy Gilmore, Kieran Tierney coming back in, he missed the first game. Tierney was outstanding last night, and he is a great player. All Celtic fans will know that, and Arsenal as well. He's a brilliant player. And I think those decisions and the shape that Steve Clark set up as well with the wing-backs. It was almost a five at times at the back. But in possession, they were very good as well. And the three in midfield, McGregor, John McGinn, and particularly Billy Gilmore, 20 years of age, Reggie, went to a game like that. He was absolutely brilliant. And we've seen him a couple of times with Chelsea. He's obviously found it difficult to get starting time with Chelsea, but he's going to be a star of the future, this kid. He's outstanding. And the biggest thing for me, we all knew his ability and how good he was, and how well he played last night. But considering he hasn't played much football, Reggie, to go into a game like that, almost rusty, and to put on a performance that he did was absolutely brilliant.
And
so
he took him off, you could see he was absolutely drained, having given it all. And that was the one thing. I said this to Ken earlier, Alan. You know, the tenacity of the Scottish players and the way they just kept tracking back and, you know, following back Dykes, Adams getting back in there to defence, you know, helping out at all times, and contrast that maybe with some of the likes of Kane and Sterling and these guys. I mean, they kind of were walking back, but the Scottish lads were lashing back every time to help out, to make sure they gave nothing.
Well, that ultimately what happens, Reggie, when you have an inferior team playing against a superior team, we all know unless the superior team matched the effort of the underdog, that's exactly what happens, and that's what we saw last night. And for me, England never matched a fight in Scotland whatsoever. And Scotland got their just rewards in the game, as you said, were fighting for everything. They had a brilliant attitude about them. They were highly motivated. And ultimately, England have better players. But unless they were willing to match that effort, to match that fight, and then let their quality overtake Scotland, they were always going to be in for a dogfight. And that's exactly the way it played out for me. Scotland, they worked so hard for every ball. But I also was impressed with them in possession as well. I thought they were good and held on to the ball at times, particularly with Gilmore, because he's very brave, wants to receive the ball in all sorts of areas on the pitch, never under pressure. And I think that's the issue for England. I'm looking here even this morning, the fallout. People now are getting on Southgate's case and the players. And so far, that hasn't been the case. Everybody's been on side with him, particularly the media. Everybody's been on side with Southgate. He speaks very well in the media. I wouldn't write England off just yet, Reggie. This could be a kick up the backside that maybe they need as well, because they'll now know the standard that they'll need to get up to if they want to go on and win this tournament. Never mind just try and beat Scotland, but if they're trying to win this tournament, as everybody knows they are, I looked at Italy during the weekend, were absolutely brilliant. And what Italy have the fight of a Scotland, and they also have the quality of the players as well. So that's the standard that England need to get up to if they're going to win this tournament. And you look at France even the other night as well against Germany, they look so dangerous on the counter-attack, solid in defence as well. So England need to improve drastically, but I wouldn't be writing them off just yet either, Reggie.
Alan, we have a very particular interest in Portugal, of course, because they're our next opponents in the World Cup qualifiers in September. We know what Ronaldo did the other night at 37, 38 years of age, whatever age he is. But what did you make of the Portuguese and what you've seen of them so far in the tournament?
He must be about 56 at this stage, is he, Reggie?
Same age as you, then.
Yeah, he can move a lot quicker than me for 56, though, I'll tell you that.
He could when he was 16, too.
He's absolutely phenomenal, and what more can we say about this man? It's just incredible, really. What have I made of Portugal? I thought they were, to be fair to Hungary, I thought Hungary were plucky in the first match, well-organised as well, but the longer the game went on, obviously the quality overtook them and ultimately got the penalty, and then Ronaldo scored a couple of great goals as well. So I think Portugal will go deep in the tournament as well. They have the quality. You look at them in the attacking areas, Ruben Dias at the back. They have a big game against Germany today, And that's what I'm talking about, Declan, in terms of England. If they want to win this tournament, you look at the opposition that I've been impressed with so far. Italy have been the number one. France not far behind them. I have Portugal in the mix. And also, I thought Belgium, when Hazard and De Bruyne came on in the second half the other night, were absolutely brilliant as well. And they look really strong, particularly if those two get up to match speed and they play from the start, which I think they will in the next game. So, as Reggie said at the start of the conversation, I've loved it so far. I think it's been brilliant. Even a couple of the lesser teams have been absolutely great as well to watch. And Scotland, now I'd love to see Scotland qualify after the performance last night. I think the work rate and the effort that they put into that game last night, I think that deserves them a good shot at the game during the week against Croatia. And Croatia were disappointing in the two games. I watched them again yesterday. They've been disappointing. So Scotland have a great chance and a great opportunity now. And I'd love to see them get into the knockout stages.
Yeah, I think everybody would. I think that would be a great result for them.
Well, we're all Scots now at the moment.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, Scotland and Portugal, they're my two teams. I backed Portugal before the thing, so I'll stick with them to win it. But I wouldn't be at all disappointed if I saw Scotland going further in it. Who have you got on the show this week, Alan?
Will Clark, actually, Declan will know. Will is the head of the youth development structure now at the FEI, so Will is going to come in. It might be a bit of a serious one this week, Reggie, but good in terms of they've just announced a new sponsorship deal for the underage leagues as well at National League level, so that's a good news story also, so we're going to discuss all that. Gary Deegan last week was brilliant. People should check that out also, Reggie.
Absolutely, no, we will get that. I mean, I think that's good. I'm delighted to hear that you're chatting to someone about the development again, because we God knows we need it. Okay, Alan.
Well, you look at Scotland and the development that they've showed and Wales, look how Wales are doing as well, so we need to get our arse in here, Reggie.
We need to catch up big time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Listen, Alan, enjoy the game, especially the one tonight, Portugal-Germany. I'll be glued to that one. I'll chat to you again next week.
Thanks a million, lads.
Take care. Well, that's all we've got time for on this week's show. Thank you for listening to us on Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Thanks to our producer, Jane McNamara. And I'd also like to thank all of our guests who joined us on today's show. We'll be back again next week with more of the same. So take care, stay safe, and have a great week.